could be argued that, in the last few decades, no group has done more to sustain and expand an appreciation of classic cinema than the cable channel Turner Classic Movies, otherwise known as TCM. In recent years, TCM has expanded its media offerings to include destination events, including a world-class film festival. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. To the delight of many cinephiles, for the sixth straight year, TCM is bringing its Classic Film Festival back to Hollywood for four immersive days of film screenings and special events. And I'm delighted to have back on the program TCM Senior Vice President for Programming, Charlie Tabish. Good morning.
Good morning, Charles.
Great to hear from you again.
You too. Thank you.
Congratulations. It's shaping up very nicely. The film festival has really become almost like a pilgrimage site, I feel like, for loyal fans and viewers of the channel. Does the pressure rise every year to outdo the preceding year?
Well, I suppose we feel like we have to just at least keep the momentum going. You know, I don't know if it's a matter of outdoing the previous year as much as just making sure that we you know, keep providing something that people enjoy. And so that's always a challenge. But I think this year is shaping up very nicely.
It is, certainly, and you are announcing things almost daily or weekly as you go into the festival. It's a sprawling festival, even though it's compact into 4 days, but how many film titles do you expect to have by the time you're done?
I think the total count is 80.
Wow, extraordinary. One of the things that I think really marks the TCM Festival for me when I go out there is, as opposed to other festivals I may attend from time to time, is I've never had the same level of sense among the viewers and the attendees, just this incredible love of cinema that attracts the faithful from all over the country, if not the world.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It's pretty amazing. We try to look at the festival similarly to the channel in that we want to not just show films, but put them in context and make sure that we have people there who can put them in proper context as they're watching them or have special events surrounding the films that are relevant to classic movies, just like we do on the channel itself. And so, in that sense, I think it's become a place that classic movie lovers really, really love. It's just it's a great weekend.
And the camaraderie, you know, the cable channel is an amazing accomplishment in its own right, what's been able to be achieved over several decades. But viewing at home and disconnected, you just sense this craving among the attendees that they want to be with their own people. and they know they're there with thousands of others who just love the same things that they do.
Yeah, no, it's completely right. And, you know, I think it's somewhere between 80 and 90% of the pass holders come from outside of California.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are just people who live in an area where there are no revival theaters or where there aren't a lot of, you know, they don't know a lot of other classic movie lovers. And they're able to come here and be with like-minded people, and they make new friends, or they, you know, meet friends that they've met over the years at the film festival. And that's been a great experience. It's something we were sort of hoping would happen when we started, that it would become about the community as much as it is anything else. And so you're right. It's very different from the channel in that sense. And then, of course, just as great as, you know, we think we love the channel, there's nothing like watching the movies on a big screen with an audience.
Yeah.
So that's great, too.
It's the experience. The schedule, as it rolls out, is expansive, and it's impossible to do justice to all of your programming in this show, but I would tell listeners to go to filmfestival.tcm.com for all the late-breaking news and to see how it's all laying out. But I know every year you like to try to have some overarching themes that connect a number of the films to kind of create threads that weave their way through the festival. What's this year organized around?
This year it's History According to Hollywood.
Oh.
So not every film will be within that overall umbrella theme, but the majority will be, and we're hoping that throughout the weekend you get a sense of, you know, how history has been portrayed by Hollywood, how much have we learned, and how much have we been deceived by Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems like a topic that's pretty relevant today with all the films that have come out that have been, you know, controversial because of their accuracy or lack of accuracy. And so it seems like a worthy topic to address.
You're right. It seems like an almost perennial controversy, particularly around the Oscars, which have just closed, that every year we get a few films that people array themselves in opinion on. This year it was American Sniper and Selma, probably the two front runners that had the most heat built up around them. And but I guess that's really what you're getting at, is that making movies is not the same as documenting history.
Well, that's exactly right. It's not. It's very different. And in fact, one of the panel discussions is about that, and you know, how much responsibility does Hollywood have to be accurate when showing a movie that's based on a true story?
Mm-hmm.
And it is, I think, an interesting question, and I think it's one that, you know, the movies aren't meant to be literally true. At the same time, there are movies that I think I've learned from, or at least that I've gotten a sense of, you know, historical facts and that I feel like have educated me in some sense, even if not all the details were quite right. And, of course, there are others that were just, you know, I think completely deceptive in many ways. So I don't know. It's an interesting subject, certainly.
What are some of the big films that you're programming to illuminate this thread?
Well, there are a lot. I mean, opening night is The Sound of Music, and that will be with Julie Andrews and Christopher Plummer in attendance. And that, of course, is a historical story, but, you know, Hollywoodized in an incredible way. Some of the other movies, 1776 is one of my favorites, and that's one where I feel like, you know, I kind of learned, but as I learned about the revolutionary period from the movie, and I enjoyed it immensely, and at the same time, there were some inaccuracies, but on balance, I think it was a really interesting and educational movie, too. Malcolm X will be playing with Spike Lee, and that's just a recent biopic. With Lenny, the portrait of Lenny Bruce, with Dustin Hoffman there to help talk about that, along with Alec Baldwin.
That's a great Bob Fosse film.
Yeah.
From the 70s, isn't it?
That's exactly right. So, and there are quite a few movies that we're doing. One of the themes within the history categories, herstory, so movies that are about great women, including Queen Christina and Norma Rae and The Miracle Worker, The Diary of Anne Frank, and one or two more.
I guess you could also say The Wind and the Lion is sort of along that Candace Bergen.
Yeah, The Wind and the Lion is another great one, and that one is part of a tribute to the stunt coordinator, Terry Leonard.
Two of my favorite John Ford films you're showing, and you can't think of history and the movies without thinking of John Ford, and you're showing Young Mr. Lincoln and My Darling Clementine, two very different films about different historical epochs, but you have Peter Fonda there, too. One of the amazing things about the TCM Festival is you have these people who are filmmakers in their own right, but also in the case of Peter Fonda is going to illuminate people about his father, Henry Fonda.
That's right, and that's very exciting for us because we have him helping introduce those two films, but we also have him in a special panel to talk with Scott Eyman, the author, about his father and his father's legacy. But back to the John Ford example that you mentioned, that's actually one of the other sub-themes throughout the weekend is history according to John Ford.
Mm-hmm.
So as you mentioned, we do have My Darling Clementine, we have Young Mr. Lincoln, we've also got They Were Expendable.
Oh, sure.
Airmail, and The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. So quite a few, because you're exactly right. You can't sort of delve into the topic of Hollywood and history without a fair amount of Ford.
You had me at They Were Expendable. I'll be there for that.
Good.
I wanted to ask you, too, the panels that you build around these, it's not all just sitting in theaters watching films and listening to filmmakers talk before the films. You have these wonderful panels that you create that hosted around in and around the theaters or Hollywood Boulevard. And one of the newer panels I see, something seems new to me at least, is that you've got three very contemporary people coming whose real life stories were translated to cinema just in the last few years. You have the subjects of Argo, Foxcatcher, and 127 Hours there to talk about what that's like having your own life story translated onto cinema.
Exactly. That's another way that we're trying to look at the subject of history according to Hollywood. And, you know, what's it like to be somebody who's actually been, you know, portrayed on film and to see yourself and how what's accurate and what isn't and what do you like and what do you don't like about that. So it's just another approach or another angle into the subject.
Of course, you can't cover all of this and have the kinds of interviews and panels you're doing without also creating your own history of Hollywood, and that's one of the great things about the TCM Festival is that you're documenting many of these conversations so that you're preserving that those oral histories and those comments and those interviews for posterity, but also for re-airing on the channel. And and creating your own documentaries. I know that one of the most interesting things you're doing is partnering with the Academy there. You've got a screening of Gunga Din where you have special effects folks going to be talking about how the sound and special effects for a classic film like that were put together.
Correct. Well, we're partnering with the Academy in a couple of different ways, and one of those is with Gunga Din, and then the special effects experts, Craig Barron and Ben Burt, who have worked on special effects in Hollywood for many years, doing a special presentation around that. But two other ways that we're partnering with the Academy are Hollywood Home Movies, something that we've shown every year or for the last few years, and then a hand-cranked projector show. So
yes.
Going back 100 years or so to show movies that when they were first, very, very earliest years of film exhibition where hand-cranked projectors were used to show the films, and we have a special presentation. Those partnerships with the Academy are great, and they seem especially relevant this year.
I think that really makes audiences feel like they are part of history, because something as special as that, watching short films that are hand-cranked from the early 20th century, rarely happens, and knowing that you're going to be among the handful of people who have ever seen that presented is really makes for a powerful experience. You've got some, I know silence are a big favorite of yours, and you've got some wonderful other silent films showing Limelight and Steamboat Bill, but the world premiere of a film that many thought was lost. Tell me about the Houdini film from 1919.
Yeah, it's called The Grim Game. It was his first feature film. I don't think a lot of people even realize that he made movies. So he did, and the ones that survived were after this one, and I don't think they were particularly highly regarded. I mean, they were sort of fun. And this one was considered his best, but it was also thought to be lost. Film historian and preservationist Rick Schmidlin called me maybe almost a year ago and said that he had a connection or a contact to get a hold of a print, and it just seemed like it would be too special to pass up. And so we went down the path of trying to acquire the print and seeing if it was real and seeing if it, the condition of the material. And it turns out that there was a 95-year-old collector who knew Houdini's widow and who had a copy. And so Rick was able to obtain the print from him. And we hired somebody from NYU to do the score. And we will be premiering it at the film festival, and it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's a fun movie. Until now, there had been a 5-minute excerpt that had been found, and you could see that 5-minute excerpt, and it was pretty thrilling. It was an actual plane crash at the culmination, the end of the movie. But to see that in the context of the entire movie is really thrilling, and it's a fun story.
That's a phone call you won't soon forget, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's right. No, it was pretty special. And like I said, I think a lot of he's such an iconic figure and really, mysterious in so many ways. So to see him on screen, as an actor is really special.
You have an extraordinary list of scholars and filmmakers lined up to be presenting at the festival, but I just wanted to mention, run down a couple of notables. You mentioned Spike Lee, Peter Fonda, Dustin Hoffman, Sophia Loren will be there.
Yeah.
Shirley MacLaine, you're honoring with a number of events. Julie Andrews, as you said, and Anne Margaret's there, I guess, for The Cincinnati Kid. William Friedkin. Is there
Ken
a favorite
Howard
that you're really looking forward to? I know you're busy during the festival, but I know you probably carve out time to see something along the way.
Well, I'm going to try to see as much as I can of 1776 to be able to see it on the big screen. And Ken Howard and William Daniels and the director Peter Hunt will be there. So I am excited about that. And I, of course, Steamboat Bill Jr. I think will be a lot of fun. I also like that in some of the movies we have real-life people that are, again, sort of connecting to the theme. So for Apollo 13, we have Captain James Lovell, who was on Apollo 13, and to talk about his experience and talk about the movie.
Does he look like Tom Hanks? Because that's
no,
what most people
really
think,
maybe
right?
Maybe he did at one point. And Norma Ray, we have Bruce Rayner, who was the labor organizer who worked with the real-life person who organized the union that was depicted in Norma Ray, and we have various distinguished female chemists who was inspired by Madame Curie to be there with the presentation of Madame Curie. So it's not just about the big stars, which of course is great, and I'm really glad, and it's vital that we include them, but also having some other interesting perspectives as well.
And I see you have George Lazenby there to represent one of my favorite James Bond films and most overlooked Bond film on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
My favorite Bond film, absolutely. And I'm really excited about it. And that's another one I'm going to try to see if as much as I can.
Yeah, well, you and me both.
Yeah.
I'll save you a seat.
Thank you.
Well, it's always nice to talk to you, Charlie. And it looks like an amazing schedule that you've put together. And I know it's not fully revealed, so listeners can go to your website at filmfestival.tcm.com. to stay up on that. Thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you very much, Charles.
I've been discussing the 6th annual TCM Classic Film Festival with TCM Senior Vice President for Programming, Charlie Tabish. The festival runs March 26th to the 29th in the heart of Hollywood, and festival passes are limited but still available. To stay up to date on festival announcements and to see a lineup of films and events, log on to filmfestival.tcm.com. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.